Welcome back to another episode of the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. We are dedicated to being sovereign citizens of Bitcoin. We're here sharing our journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. I'm Brady.
I'm Tommy.
And today we've got a smattering of topics to cover, a little smorgasbord of Bitcoin news and gossip and conversation and happenings to talk about. Tommy, we're going to start with some Bitcoin scaling information just because, you know, Bitcoin is scaling and it's happening the way it should happen. All those altcoin B cashers thinking that Bitcoin can't scale without increasing the block size like crazy are wrong. It's happening. Konano Bitcoin on Twitter has posted a couple of updates about the Bitcoin network.
This is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, recently we mined the biggest block ever on the Bitcoin network. 2.26 megabytes in size, right? And of course, now the we didn't change the block size limit from 1 megabyte, but we did switch to something called the block weight limit with the SegWit innovation. And now we can have up to, theoretically...
That was a little bit over a year ago, right?
Yeah, let's see. What is it now? It was in August. Yep, we're already in September. So yeah, it was about a year ago.
About a year ago, that was SegWit 2, right? Is that what that was?
No, it was just SegWit. SegWit 2X was the proposal from the New York Agreement, the NYA.
So it was just SegWit, right? We're just refreshing everybody's memory. Or maybe my memory, because Brady's all over this stuff.
So we have that theoretical limit now with SegWit of a 4 megabyte block weight, and we got up to 2.26. I think SegWit adoption is around 40-45% now, and just keeps climbing. So Bitcoin is scaling. And then we have an update as well from Konano Bitcoin about the Lightning Network, which just continues to grow at a crazy pace. And we've got almost 3,500 nodes. Over 12,000 channels. There's over almost 115 Bitcoin capacity on the Lightning Network now. This graph is just up and to the right. And, you know, I'm super excited that we're starting to see some, like, plug-and-play Bitcoin node, Lightning Network node hardware come out. Casa HODL, the professional custody company, has just released a good looking, like, little white box that you can, bright white box with a purple Casa logo on top.
It's about the size of what a box of a deck of cards.
I think maybe like
maybe
two,
a little like, bit, but square, right?
More yeah,
square.
It's probably about two decks of cards, and then an inch and a half tall. It looks like anyway in the picture. I haven't actually seen it yet. I ordered mine. I think I got into that first 100. Batch that's going to be
an animal,
coming out.
Man, you ordered one of those.
I insta ordered that, man. That was just
that's
like,
a global thing. There was
take my money.
More there. Did you wake up in the middle of the night and actually do that or what?
Like, they posted.
You used to trade the South Korean Open before your wife stopped you,
right? Yeah, no, they were
South Korean Bitcoin Open.
Yeah, I happened to just be online. They posted it in the morning, and I saw the Medium post about 20 minutes after it went up, and I just insta ordered that thing.
That's good. That's cool.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
We at Citizen Bitcoin, I get to say we because we're counterparts on this, but I had nothing to do with it. But we stay on the cutting edge here at Citizen Bitcoin.
I did have a Lightning Network node up. I was in one of the first 1,000 nodes. I think I was like node number 800 or 900, something like that.
And I did witness it. I got to see it working there for a while. But it was a situation where it wasn't really, it was in terms of running it all the time. What happened with that?
It was different
than mining, right? It's kind of.
Yeah, my first attempt, I tried to set it up here at the office, and I didn't have control over
the
router.
I got to see it.
Yeah, I didn't have control over it. Well, you saw me syncing the blockchain and stuff. I didn't have control over the router, so I couldn't accept incoming connections, et cetera. So I ended up moving it home. I ran it for a while. I got my Blockstream sticker, but this is going to be.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
This is going to be a lot easier. And I'm excited to see that. And there's a Lightning in a Box, like .com or something, or just Google Lightning in a Box. I don't know what the extension is necessarily. They're also making some. And there's Bitseed as well, which I don't think they've come out with a Lightning node yet, but they've got nice Bitcoin network
nodes. So Casa HODL, you're both a Bitcoin node and a Lightning node, or how? Just to clarify
Yeah, both a Bitcoin node and a Lightning node on the box. It comes pre-synced, and there's a nice kind of custom web user interface that they've created.
Really?
They're going to handle updates through that web interface. So just like one-click updates to the software. And then, of course, you could use like a Lightning wallet, like Zap Wallet by Jack Mallers, and you could connect to your Lightning node. And then you are your own bank. You have your own checking account with the Lightning network. You've got your Lightning wallet, and everything's running off of your node, which is can be running 100%, you know, like full-time, watching the network for you, maintaining state, all that.
That's so fantastic.
It's pretty cool. All right, so Bitcoin is scaling. Things are going really well. Just kind of chugging along here in this, you know, kind of quiet time with the price where engineers can just get stuff done, heads down, and it's happening. So
I like
pretty cool.
You call it quiet time. That's pretty good.
Yeah, this is the insanity and cacophony of
down what do they call it, like a bottom in the market or whatever. You call it quiet time. I like that.
This is quiet time. This is it's recess. We'll come again soon. Thought we'd bring up yesterday, just on the kind of on the gossipy front of Bitcoin. Yesterday, apparently there's a bunch of people floating around somewhere in the ocean on a blockchain cruise.
I know. I just really wonder. Would you actually? Have you ever been on a cruise?
I've never been on a cruise myself.
Would you do that?
I'm curious. I mean, I hear some people, you know, say some good things about a cruise. I think there's probably some other ways I'd spend my money before going on a cruise.
It's not money, it's also time.
And time, too.
I mean, I don't know, man. In terms of a cruise, it's just, you know.
Well, I don't want to get on a boat with Roger Veer. I know that.
It's really cool because my wife thinks cruises are ridiculous also. So in terms of being hoodwinked, but that's like an old school term. You probably don't know that term, but anyway, in terms of
I know that term, but
hoodwinked into a cruise, yeah, like, you know, but now maybe, I don't know, man.
I feel like there's two types of people in the world. There's cruise people and people who would never be caught dead on a cruise for various reasons.
It's
one of those things. It's one of those polarizing.
Everybody always talks about the food, or mm-hmm. most people talk about the food.
Yeah.
The thing is, I went on a cruise. I would probably I'd have to be really careful because if they had a casino, I'd probably play craps the entire time on the cruise.
I'd be right there with you, man.
And then go get food and then play craps probably.
That sounds like a good day, actually. Well, there's people are floating
until you
around.
Until you run out all your dough. So,
yeah. Right. So there's a blockchain cruise going on. It's basically like some kind of conference, a blockchain related conference, on a cruise. And Jimmy Song and Roger Veer were supposed to debate yesterday. They ended up debating. Jimmy was, you know, I think pretty skeptical about how this would all go down, and he tried to lay out some ground rules so to prevent Roger from his usual tactics of interrupting and sort of, you know, just annoyingly dominating a conversation. And so he had one microphone was his rule, and kind of a Lincoln Douglas style debate where it's like 10 minutes each and then 5 minutes each and then, you know, whatever.
And you know about this because you're a debate expert, right? You won the championship or something, right? Or several or something, your team, and then individually, and you're like a debate.
We had a pretty sweet debate squad back in the day in high school and had some success. It was a good time.
And Brady he's a debating guy.
I did a policy. I was doing policy debate. But Lincoln Douglas debate was one of the alternatives to policy debate, and just a one-on-one debate named after, of course, Abraham Lincoln which Douglas, what was that guy's name? Or his first name? I don't remember his first name.
Stephen
Douglas. Thank you. Yeah.
With a PH.
Back in the 1850s in the US. Anyway, so Jimmy tried to define all these rules to kind of have a civil debate, and it just kind of went to crap at the very beginning. Because Jimmy introduced the format. He didn't say anything about himself, but he was like, here's how you can expect this debate to go down. And then Roger's like, all right, I need a minute to introduce myself too. And Jimmy's like, I didn't introduce myself. I just introduced the format. And Roger goes and grabs for the microphone, and Jimmy like pulls it away. And then somebody brings Roger a microphone, a second microphone from like down out in the audience. And Roger starts going at it. And Jimmy's just like, all right, if there's going to be two microphones, you know, that violates one of my rules. I'm out. And just walks off. Anyway, apparently the debate ended up happening. But I just
that drama was. We watched it. Yeah, I started to watch part of it, with Song laying out what his points were, which I think we're going to follow up with here with Medium, right, Post?
Yeah. So Jimmy posted his sort of opening speech about the the difference between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. To Medium, and we'll link to it in the show notes. It's definitely worth a read.
Yeah, I mean, all you really need to, it's worth a read, but the key takeaway is the Bcash is fiat money.
So yeah, that's, and Bitcoin is sound money.
And so that's kind of the key point. And recall, well, maybe not because people are new to the show, but we pretty much covered Bcash and we're very, very skeptical about it, to say the least. And actually, I think we said in that episode we weren't really going to be talking about it much anymore. But this is current and important to discuss, so that's why we're on it right now.
Well, this Medium post by Jimmy is sort of like the last nail in the coffin. It's just like kind of brings everything together. And we have the benefit of hindsight now. It's been over a year since Bcash forked off. The price is crashing. The market is speaking. Bitcoin is scaling,
so and Bcash is blowing up. It was 0.1 Bitcoin, right?
Or it kind of came out at about 0.1.
And maybe went a little bit higher. So the idea
it
was
pumped up to about 0.45 on that like last November. And I remember staying up all night that night because that was when I was in the midst of my trading insanity. And
I remember. And, I remember you coming in saying, right. So
oh, man, that night.
Transaction. Yeah. So
I flipped a bunch of Bcash and turned it into, I almost doubled my Bitcoin that night. Because it went from like, came out at about 0.1 and then ran up to the 0.45, pumped up, and then just tanked. And from there, it's back down to about 0.07 now. So it's below where it came out originally when it forked. There's a massive debate going on in Bitcoin Cash community because there's Craig Wright is, trying to fork off from Bitcoin Cash.
There's what is it? It's Binance, the IPO, the mining company. What's that name of that mining company?
Oh, Bitmain.
Bitmain, sorry.
Binance is what you're thinking of, the exchange?
Yeah, no, yeah. I meant Bitmain. Bitmain's,
but Bitmain.
Yeah, that's my mistake. But Bitmain, the whole idea with that particular entity is that their game plan was to go ahead and take the Bcash route. And so they have a situation where over the last, it would have to be over the last 12 or 13 months, they've pretty much, since the initiation of Bcash, right? So that would be 13 months or so.
Yeah.
They made the call to utilize their Bitcoin and convert it into Bcash. So
right.
Third grade math, they're getting crushed because
they are.
They basically, instead of just holding their Bitcoin, they said, we're going to go ahead and push this Bcash thing. And that's probably for a different episode, but this Bitmain's attempting to go to IPO. And effectively, what they've got is miners that are a couple years old in terms of what they manufacture. And then additionally, they're sitting all this Bcash.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot, I mean, there is speculation that this, a lot of the dumping that's been going on during this bear market has been Bitmain selling their Bitcoin because it was the only liquid asset that they had to really turn into cash.
With Bitmain, I mean, it's a classical situation from the standpoint of cash liquidity within a business. I don't know all the details, housed within Bitmain itself, but it's just interesting to look at it from afar, from the standpoint of trying to IPO and just that whole story. And maybe that's something we can cover on a later episode, but that whole thing's pretty fascinating just because they made the call, they being that entity and that top guy that's over there. What's that guy's name?
Jihan.
Yeah, Jihan Wu. Who prior to the Bcash situation on the fork was very solid, very, very stellar. Not that he's. I don't know what his situation right now is. Other than it looks like they're in a lot of trouble with this particular entity.
Yeah.
On two fronts, the fact that they went made the call to go all in on Bcash, and then they got behind the curve on their mining equipment.
Yeah, two episodes ago, we did talk about Bitmain quite a bit and go into that whole scenario and what's going on with them. And since then, it's kind of played out to confirm that the story as Samson Mao laid it out, because he was kind of getting some insider information from these IPO decks that were circulating, was right. Yesterday I saw that.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess the other part of it is just, it's just top of mind with me, just the fact this whole Bcash component, what's going on with this, allegedly with Bcash trying to, say that, or Roger Ver with this whole story trying to say that Bcash is the real Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually yesterday when I was, watching Twitter about this debate between Roger and Jimmy, Jihan actually posted on one of the threads, because it was, somebody was saying that there were a bunch of people with Bitcoin Cash shirts or something on, and Jihan was like, welcome to reality. And that guy is, I don't know, he's just not living in the same reality as most of us, apparently.
Well, but he has to live in that reality because
his only hope.
He made a bet. And that is a bet.
That is a big bet. All right. So moving on, the Winklevoss twins have launched a stable coin using their Gemini Trust. And
been working on it for, let's see, they founded it 4 years ago.
Yeah, right. They were early investors in Bitcoin. And this is basically a competitor to Tether. Tether is USDT or USD Tether, which is the Tether, meaning that it's sort of tethered to,
it's strictly pegged to
the dollar.
It's strictly pegged one-to-one to the US dollar.
Right. And
this is Tether has been, according to the actual Medium post from Cameron Winklevoss.
Tether has been sort of accused of for a while now, especially by Bitfinext on Twitter, of not having the dollar reserves for the peg, to hold the peg, to actually hold up the peg,
right.
And that they're basically inflating Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies by having just printing a bunch of Tether without having the actual dollars to back it up.
And there hasn't been any concept of let's put it this way, there hasn't been a proven audit,
right,
that with Tether, and so there's a massive amount of skepticism around it.
Yeah.
It's also not regulated.
They've tried. There's sort of been half-assed attempts at audits, which just makes it almost more suspect when you.
It's almost like that. Somebody take they meet in a restaurant and then they come out. Somebody comes out with a napkin with it saying all the money's there.
So,
not that bad, but similar. You get this hokey,
not quite that bad.
This hokey international stuff, like a piece of paper. It's like back when Boris Yeltsin in Soviet Union, busted up, or USSR busted up, and people had pieces of paper saying they had reserve rights, all over the country that Boris Yeltsin, on this letterhead that Boris Yeltsin approved. Similar type of thing.
Well, that's funny. I didn't know about that. Yeah, so this stablecoin from Gemini.
I have all sorts of stuff back there that I can come up with, Brady, believe it or not.
Oh, man, that's why I love chatting about Bitcoin with you, Tommy. I always learn something. So Gemini is launching a stablecoin that's an alternative to Tether that is going to be, basically more trusted because it is regulated by the New York Department of Financial Services. And it's the bank account to back up and hold the peg.
I think it's in a State Street account, which is a big, just so everybody knows, that's a big deal. Okay? It's triple A rated, above reproach, whole thing. I mean, that's serious.
They've got several third parties that will be auditing on a regular basis, at least monthly. I read that they're going to be doing that monthly and being transparent about that.
But there's one thing about it. Okay, they built it on the Ethereum network according to ERC-20 standard tokens.
Yeah, so it's going to be an ERC-20 token, whereas Tether is built on the Omni layer, which is a protocol to build tokens on top of the Bitcoin blockchain.
Right, so it's tight. So I don't know what these, unless they got into it so far that they had to do it, but I don't understand why they would put this on Ethereum. I personally think that that's just, it's going to become a major issue. And I'm just wondering if something happens with the underlying Ethereum network protocol, such that if the stable coin runs into a problem, whether these Winklevoss, they probably have it structured.
It'll be interesting to see
if they can be protected from the standpoint of how it's set up, but I wonder if they can end up with liability on this.
Oh yeah,
it runs into trouble.
Interesting. Yeah, Ethereum is having trouble scaling. Of course, I don't know how much of demand that this coin will put on the Ethereum blockchain, but it's getting the size of the Ethereum blockchain is kind of getting out of control. This whole idea about sharding, or which is just a funny word, but it's like
for me, it's a situation where if you're looking at all these different token projects, and they're all and so people are out, groups, investors, entrepreneurs, and mainly pushed by Silicon Valley originally in terms of putting everything on Ethereum. Recall we had discussed this before. It was so great that a year ago, there were particular individuals who were saying that, oh yeah, everything's going to your Ethereum, and there's going to be a flippening.
Yep.
Meaning that Ethereum's going to end up at greater value than Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's going away, it's not going to be as important. And the actual exact opposites occurred here, right? And so where I go with this is just when you sit there and say, this is, we're talking about sound money, and so you've got a Gemini dollar that they're basically purporting, right? And you jump in here if you think that this is the analogy or where I'm going with this is incorrect. But the idea is, if you're talking about sound money, I don't think it's a good idea to build it on top of the Ethereum network. And we can go back and say, you've already had, what is it, the DAO? You already had a hard fork that they utilized to get back, what was it, $70 or $80 million for some people that made a mistake on a smart contract, so somebody else ended up with the money. And then you turn and you look at Bitcoin, which I think is a critical point, is that it's immutable. It's got the Alinea, meaning that there's never been an issue with somebody, quote, cracking it or hard forking it away from the underlying protocol. Or having a situation where it's unstable.
Yeah.
So that would be my.
It's been hard forked, but not hard forked to roll the blockchain back and get assets.
Well, that's the key point.
That's the key point.
And that's what I mean by that. It's been hard forked, but it's going forward.
And the original project has sort of continued on. There's been forks of Bitcoin, like Bitcoin Cash.
Well, I think it's important. So that's key to my point. My point is that it's in terms of what's happening today and going backwards in Bitcoin, it's never been changed.
Yep.
Right. And it's been around. So my prediction, even though no one's asking, is that this underlying Ethereum network that they built this stable coin on is going to be the major issue with this.
Yeah, so it's interesting that they've improved on Tether by creating a regulated asset that's going to be checked and transparent about the peg, and the dollars are all there. So they're kind of solving that problem of USDT, but then they decided to build on Ethereum and not OmniLayer.
Yeah, and I don't know. I honestly don't know what they're thinking, because I have no idea. Unless they started 4 years ago, I don't and they just decided that they had to stay with it. But I personally don't know.
So
I think they have to be smarter than this. So it's probably I'm missing something, but I'm still going with my point.
I mean, it could be, I guess, that, I mean, let's just look at the other side of it and try to look at it from their perspective. There are certainly people who are not as skeptical about Ethereum as we are, and Ethereum's in a bad spot right now. But this is also, being in a bad spot is how you fix things. Necessity is the mother of invention, et cetera. And so perhaps now that, Ethereum is up against the wall, and a lot of these kind of first wave of projects that were built on top of Ethereum are failing.
They don't have crypto kitties on there, you know, like causing issues with the, because crypto kitties isn't, remember, I mean, you had this crypto kitties on Ethereum and it caused a problem, you know, you got some guys goofing around breeding these cats and
there were like 10,000 users or something that 10,000 users.
That one kitten went for what, 130 grand or something, and then people are thinking that this was actually real. I mean, anyway, so.
I mean,
the crypto kitties caused a problem, you know, an application caused a problem with Ethereum.
Well, yeah, not even that big of an application. It was like 10 or 20,000 users at its peak, and that literally brought the Ethereum blockchain to a halt for several hours. It just couldn't work because
there's so many people, so many groups decided to use it there. It just got waved away. It wasn't like somebody said, wait a second, you know, maybe going forward, I shouldn't be using, you know, I should be careful as to what I use.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe there is the Raiden network, which is similar to Lightning that's on Ethereum. So maybe this token will take advantage of Raiden somehow. Maybe they're hopeful.
Raiden's on what? Raiden uses what? Bitcoin or uses Ethereum?
Raiden with a D is basically the Ethereum's equivalent of Lightning network. So maybe they'll use that. Maybe they're hopeful that.
Oh my goodness.
Sharding.
Who's going to work on that? Raiden.
There's a team that is building Raiden Network, which is a second layer scaling solution for Ethereum.
That's good. I'll have to look that one.
Anyway,
up.
There's
maybe I'll spend 3 or 4 minutes looking at that.
Right. There's I don't know. There's some chances that Ethereum has, and maybe it will come out of this hole. Who knows? I don't see how. I don't know. I don't see why they would choose to do that.
I was Buterin, the guy that invented, who's a phenomenal, okay, in terms of what he's been able to do. But, I mean, he's coming out now saying, oh, wait a second, and maybe it's misconstrued, but, you know, in terms of there's kind of, in quote, a cap on cryptocurrency or something along that. Recently, he's basically talking in terms of trying to maybe talk the whole euphoria out of cryptocurrency or something. So
yeah, I know he's not a fan of all of the speculation. So, you know, I remember at the height of the speculation, he came out and said, "Yeah, we just hit a $500 billion market cap for cryptocurrencies, but have we earned it?" You know, and it was a whole thread about how much of cryptocurrencies good have they actually done in the world? This is all speculation. It's not deserved, etc. So I know he's got some feelings about that. So he's probably, you know, doesn't want that kind of a run to happen again or whatever. But
anyway, it's just we're off. The whole thing is a stable coin. I think it's generally, and we part of it's just kind of take also all the views with this, but it seems that it should, the stable coin should be a good thing, right? So I think generally, so.
Yeah, and it, you know, if there is a vision that the future of Ethereum is the basis of a kind of a new financial industry based on cryptocurrencies, and if that's going to be the case, and there's going to be a bunch of security tokens, you know, people are going to, instead of creating a stock on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ or wherever, they're going to create a security token and trade it on Gemini. Then you're going to need pegged U.S. stable, you know, U.S. dollar stablecoin to provide liquidity for all of that trading activity. And I think that's sort of the future, the best case maybe future for Ethereum.
And security tokens make all this, in my opinion, they make all the sense in the world. They make, in terms of going to that.
So yeah, you think security tokens are going to happen?
Well, offshoot of that, because compare if you really look at it seems to me to make a heck of a lot of sense in terms of how they, you know, when they originally used to have to deliver deliver actually physical securities, and it's all changed from that historically as to what happens now. But in terms of keeping track of everything and the back office and it being trustless and the whole idea of being able to do that, it seems to me that having all these transactions, in other words, ultimately being securities, mm-hmm. like stocks and bonds and whatever you want to call it, certain types of notes, and even if you're doing even private deals, loans that are busted up with a minimum so you can buy a particular, take an assignment in a particular loan, or, you know, let's say somebody has a $300 million loan, and mm-hmm. and to be able to have that set up in tokens where you have a minimum amount to be able to transact it and keep track of it, I think it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I can see some downsides to it as well, but it does seem like we're sort of inexorably heading toward that kind of a future.
Inexorably, that's a good word, man.
No, thanks.
That's almost as good as exacerbate.
All right, next
quick thing. I'm exacerbating things by bringing that up.
I wanted to finish up with this thread by Simon Lutz on Twitter, at SimonLutz21. And he writes kind of a summary of this book called The Tower of Basel. Is that what you decided was how it was pronounced? Basel? Tower of Basel? Basel? Basel is a town in
Basel.
Basel.
I'm pretty sure. And it depends, because I'm pretty sure that's it.
So Basel is a town in Switzerland. It's
the plant.
Not Basel.
It's Basel.
Yeah. It's the town in Switzerland where the Bank of International Settlements, Bank for International Settlements, is headquartered. And so he writes a thread about the history of the Bank of International Settlements based on this book called The Tower of Basel. I just started listening to that book. I'm about, third of the way through it.
Would you recommend it?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating history of this institution that was created out of in the 1930s to administer German reparations after the war, and it was designed to be outside of any governmental institution, right, and apolitical. It's got a fascinating history and has evolved into this institution that is basically the central bank of central banks. And the people who run it are usually the heads of various central banks all over the world. They come to Basel and they decide how things are, the international monetary system and the way that central banks relate to one another are going to work and policies, etc. They have a lot of influence over global interest rates and just monetary policy in general.
Unelected, right? They're not really elected by anybody, right?
They're
unelected individuals.
Yeah, and so I'll post the link to that in the show notes and everything else, of course, but check out that book if you're interested in learning about the Bank for International Settlements. The central bank for central banks, and what
are we going to just mention? I think the head guy, because we like.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but
you talk about him, because what did you say he is again?
This is this is the final boss for Bitcoin, right?
Yeah,
If you if you ever played Legend of Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda, especially,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's the final boss, Legend of Zelda. His name is Ganon. This dude looks a little bit like Ganon. So this is the Ganon of Bitcoin. The head of the Bank for International Settlements, and this is sort of the final boss. If Bitcoin is to become the reserve currency of the world, the central bank of central banks, it's got to take down the existing central bank of central banks. And it'll be just a fascinating battle to watch over the next couple of decades, see what happens. So I'll link to that, Simon Lutz thread. You can read the summary, and I'll link to the book as well. I'll provide links to Jimmy Song's piece and the other threads that we talked about. Well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, everybody. Talk to you later.
All right.